Thanks for downloading this episode of the IVMV podcast. I'm one of the co-hosts of this podcast. My name is Corey, and this episode is quite a bit different than our regular episodes, so I kind of wanted to put a little bit of a disclaimer here at the beginning. It's the off season, and there wasn't much activity with the Cubs in the last week, so we used this opportunity to invite Michael and Lawrence from the Awesome 80s podcast into the studio so that Andy and I could talk about 80s movies and baseball. There's a bit of a backstory to this episode. During the playoffs and right after the season, Michael heard us talking on the podcast about how we thought this was the most fun Cubs team that we had ever seen. And being a guy that podcasts on the 80s, Michael, he took exception to that, and I guess he felt like the 89 Cubs needed an advocate. So again, this is nothing like our regular episodes, but we had a lot of fun, and I think you will too.
Munenori. It's like Munenori Kawasaki.
Well, he was on the Rays, and then he played on some...
Yeah, he was on the Blue Jays.
Blue Jays and another team also.
So do you guys think that he, like...
Seattle.
I mean, like, it's his... I don't know, what's the right, like, term? Disfluency in English?
Yeah.
Is it just a put-on, do you think?
Oh, I think it's totally a put-on. I was watching a couple of his interviews from, like, a local Toronto station. I think he's totally putting it on.
He seems to understand more than he lets on.
Right. He's just like, no hangover.
Yeah, it seems, you know what, as soon as I saw him, do you guys know that, like, the history of Pekin High School?
Yes.
Okay. I've heard of it.
Well, like, I kind of thought, like, oh, he's like a guy that they would have, like, back in the day,
right?
They had little, like, elementary school kids dress up like Chinese rice field workers, and they were like the baseball team's bat boys and
right,
stuff.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
So did you know what?
Yeah, oh, I know, okay. About it, yeah. But I just didn't know they did.
The dragons. They went all out.
They're currently the Dragons.
They're the Dragons.
They're the Dragons.
I guess
they weren't the Dragons.
No.
But like the Chinese New Year type of dragons, right?
Yeah.
Well, I thought, because it's like Pekin, I mean, they say dig a hole to China. Like the urban legend was, like, if you dug a hole straight, you'd end up in Pekin.
Well, I don't think that's true at all.
That was their
justification. Wait a second.
That is in their mind.
So Pekin's an anagram. No, it is. It is basically is Pekin. Yeah. I never, oh my gosh. This is revelatory.
Yeah.
Or is it revelatory? I don't know.
As the Chinese would say. I'm kidding.
I help take care of a guy in Pekin, so like sometimes I have to go into stores, and they still have the original signs like hanging in stores.
Wow. Like,
that's a part of the... I have pictures on my phone. Every time I see one, I take a picture. Just
that is crazy.
It's still right out in the open.
That is so weird.
They're not even trying to fool anyone. Just like, this is what we were. This is who we are.
And we're still, man, feeling it.
So they changed it like in the 80s maybe, or late 70s or
no,
something like
later.
That?
No,
it was later, yeah.
Like, was it really?
In their 90s.
That was like,
oh, geez.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, no, we meant like armor.
Right.
You know?
Oh, so I have a copy of it. There was a Peoria paper. It must have been the Journal Star. And in the early 2000s, Rich Woods was playing the Pekin Dragons, and the headline was A Chink in the Knight's Armor.
Oh my gosh.
Because that was the Rich Woods Knights. And I saved that because I'm like, someone's got to get fired over it. Like, that had to be like a fake headline they were joking about.
Right, I'm going to run it. I'm going to run
and
it.
And
this
someone
time.
Just like never erased it out of the,
oh,
out
man.
Of the printing. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we started the show off
okay.
on yeah. the right foot.
Oh, good job.
Start off with a bang.
All right. So this is a special episode.
A very
like,
special,
we've never
special
done anything
episode.
Like this. Like just sit down and talk with no. Well, Michael has plenty of direction.
I think I sent it multiple times to multiple people. So if you're not prepared, that's on you.
Did you do a word count on that?
I don't know if I can. It's on my notepad portion of the iPad. I don't know.
Okay.
It's several thousand words.
Anyway, there are plenty of talking points
right.
for this
okay,
episode.
Good.
Right. So, as far as the IVMV podcast goes, Andy and I are here. My name's Corey. So it's the two of us. and Kurt is not here. He was not available. But and then representing, and in this corner, we have the awesome 80s podcast.
Weighing in at how, like,
this is, I'd like to thank you again. This is like my third or fourth time on the podcast. Thank you for having me.
You have to introduce yourself.
I'm Michael from the Awesome 80s podcast, available at theawesome80s.net.
And .com. We own it all. This is Lawrence, also of the Awesome 80s podcast, entering our eighth year of podcast greatness.
You don't,
but do you own a GeoCities website?
Well, yeah, that's 8 years ago.
Oh, okay.
We have an AOL email address,
and
we're on Prodigy.
And one other, you know, Kurt had prior engagement today, but he also kind of really started becoming a Cubs fan sometime in the 90s. Is that correct, Corey?
Yeah, he did in college. So what we're talking about today, so he was kind of nervous about even being on this episode because he's like, I don't know what you guys are going to be talking about. So we are here to talk about, I guess, Michael, what are we here to talk about?
A few times. I listen to your show semi-religiously. By religiously, I'm downloading on Sunday nights, and I'm like, why isn't this show up yet? I need to listen to it right now.
What is Corey doing
now? What are they? It can't be that important.
You text him, what you doing, bae?
I'm just paraphrasing here, but you talked about how the 2015 team was like the most exciting Cubs team ever. And you're like, I'm just like, no, it's not. And I'm just like yelling at the TV.
You weren't into that assertion at all.
To me, it was probably the 1989 Cubs. Like, because like we were on the cusp of the 84 team, both Lawrence and I, and we're just like kind of the carryover. You're like, I guess I'm a Cub fan now. All right, I'm a Cub fan. And we didn't really live through the 84. We were just still a little too young. But like once 89 hit, it was just like, this is my team. I'm not.
It was our first taste of winning.
Yeah.
So you guys do a podcast on 80s movies and stuff, but obviously both Cubs fans.
Yes.
So why don't we go around there? I was thinking, why don't we go around the room and kind of just establish like kind of our timeline of being Cubs fans.
Okay.
And then like when we really bought into it, like really got into it. Because as a kid, casually, I don't know.
You're outside playing guns with sticks.
Where's my bike?
Right.
You know, you've got a lot of things to worry about when you're a kid.
Stick that ball card in your spokes.
Yeah. I guess for me, my first baseball memory of like watching a game, because my parents weren't huge baseball fans, but my dad worked at the time, he was at Frank's Nursery and Crafts, which did the field for Wrigley. So he always got free tickets, and I never got to go with him. So I watched it on my own. My first year was 84, was my first memory when Sutcliffe was pitching. And I didn't know much about baseball. I kind of had to teach myself. But I think the first year I totally bought in was 87. Like when that, I remember watching the first game of the season, and just Dawson was just.
I was going to say, are you a big Dawson fan? That was a great year for him.
Yeah. I loved Dawson.
It kind of felt like a mini Sammy Maguire situation later on when other Cub fans became Cub fans. Like this was like home runs. I'm watching this because of awesome Dawson, you know?
And they came in last place that year, but I didn't even like. Care because just watching Dawson every day, you just never knew what he was going to do. I think 87 was also the first year I went to Wrigley. I remember it was Dawson poster day, and they lost to Jamie Moyer, lost to Rick Rushel 2-1. And at the end of the game, all of the bleachers threw their Dawson posters on the field. And I was just like, what are you doing? Like, oh, I couldn't understand it. So 87, I think, was the first year where I understood everything. And it was like, I have to watch this game every day.
I took note of Dawson hit 49 home runs that year and drove in 137 runs.
Yes. Like every day he did something spectacular.
And you're going to throw your posters on the field.
Right. I was,
especially
as
like,
a kid, I was freaking out because I'm a hoarder. But like I at the time, I was just beginning to become a hoarder. And like,
watching, you're like, I could fit all of those.
Oh, yeah.
In our garage. Like,
wallpaper.
That poster hung on my wall till mid-90s, at least, from that game. Like, now I never would have hung it. I just would have kept it in something and never displayed it.
Well, it wasn't just the offense. Like, the defense, too, like to be up by a ton of runs or down by a ton of runs, and he'd dive into the bullpen to make a catch.
Yeah. And that was Dunston, really, a coming out party for Dunston. That was his first year.
He actually did well then.
Just as a side note, I watched video of him hitting his 400th homer with Boston as the DH, and it was painful to watch him around the bases.
Oh, his knees were shot by the time he left Chicago.
Yeah.
I was surprised he even made it around.
Like you can hear the bone on bone from the YouTube video.
Just grinding. Yeah, what's that grinding noise? Making burgers in the concession stand.
Corey, when did you first start?
I became a Cubs fan in the first season that I can remember watching was 85. I remember watching a lot of those games with my grandpa. And I just kind of remember like Ron Say. That's kind of what, like when I think back, like I don't remember that season so much. I think I just liked Ron Say because he was the Penguin. And it was just like, you know, when you're a little kid, it's like, oh, the Penguin. Cool. He's my favorite player. So that's the earliest I remember. And then we went a couple years and we didn't have cable. So, you know, back in those days, if you didn't have cable, you didn't watch the Cubs. So, but then we got cable again in 89. And so obviously the 89 season was, it was fun. I mean, it was no 2015, but it was,
right.
It was fun. So yeah, I think that's the season like 88, 89. I remember listening to a lot of games like in 88, 89, you know, but I don't know.
Dwayne Stats was your radio guy.
Well, I remember going like those years where we didn't have cable. I remember on my way to, I would walk to school and stop at the grocery store so I could buy a USA Today so that I could read the Cubs box score. So it sounds like I grew up in like the 50s.
One big thing for me,
I pulled my allowance money together so I could stop and buy a newspaper. I was the kid walking to school with a newspaper under his
and
arm,
a fishing rod too.
Like, I remember the baseball weeklies were a big thing. I remember trying to buy those.
Yeah.
This kid's gonna be the next Alex P. Keaton. Also, I remember I made my mom pump gas at Marathon because they had the Cubs. Iron-on autographs
at Unicol 76. You could get those pins.
Yeah,
I remember going there.
Right.
When did you?
Gas stations had tons of promotional stuff back then.
To me, it was probably 87 again. I remember going with my dad, and he was like pointing at the roof. He's like, "There's no lights, Michael." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm 8 years old, Dad. I don't know. I don't understand." He's like, "They don't have any lights here." I remember Sutcliffe was pitching, and it was like other people were pitched, but Sutcliffe was different because he had the different windup and approach and everything. But also, the whole idea of becoming a man. Like, there's different things that people like to... Some people engage in illegal activities. They drink to make themselves feel like an adult. But to me, it was owning the television when my dad wasn't around. And to me, like, I'm like, Cubs are on. I'm the boss of this TV.
Your mom's watching, like, Days of Our Lives or whatever.
And One Life to Live's on, and then I can watch the Cubs.
And you watch a little chest hair sprout.
So when you were on that Bartles and James wine cooler kick, that didn't make you feel like a man?
Beer just tasted so bad.
Well, the first Cubs game I went to, I think it was 90. I didn't go till 1990, and I believe I saw Mike Harkey pitch.
Yeah. I have it in my notes.
And it was an awesome game. It was 2 years after the first night game, the official or the scheduled first
August,
night game.
Okay.
So it was August 8th, 1990, and it was a game against the Cardinals, and it went 15 innings, and Andre Dawson won the game with the bases loaded walk-off single.
Oh wow.
And it was pretty awesome, and I was really glad because the bus company told us that we had to leave. Like, they were like, yep, this is the last inning, we have to go. So there was like 2 7th inning stretches, and
right,
it was a lot of fun. But
a lot of angry sober people drunk.
And it was right before school. Another highlight of that day for me, other than there was a really like pretty older girl on the bus that like befriended me and hung out.
I got a shot.
So you're
she was probably like 19 or something. You guys, I'm sure, can relate to this, that when you got new shoes for school, you didn't get to wear them until the first day of school.
Yeah.
I got to wear these to the Cubs game. So I had this awesome pair of neon green LA Gears.
Did they light up?
They didn't.
All right.
The little fins on the
they
sides.
Didn't have. They didn't have
gills
to.
Or whatever.
That cool.
So Andy, I guess, when did you start following and your first game?
About the same as you, at 85. It mostly started with trading cards with my friends, baseball cards with my friends, you know, in the late 80s. So I'd say around there, most of my friends growing up were Cubs fans. I don't really remember. I was playing a lot of Nintendo in the 80s, so I think I did more of that really than taking in a lot of games. But 89, I really started paying attention. 87 through 89, probably started paying a little bit more attention. I didn't get to a game. In fact, my grandpa took me to a Cardinals game. He was trying to get me on into the Cardinals, and somehow that didn't stick, thankfully. And
where would our friendship be if you were a Cardinals fan?
Yeah, I don't know. Would we even be friends? I don't know.
Doubtful.
Doubtful.
The Cubs are the only reason we're friends.
Or would we have a child together like Michael and Delana? I didn't end up getting to a game until I think 93, something like that, because my family really wasn't into baseball that much. So somebody gave my mom and dad tickets, and they were like, oh, let's take you to Wrigley Field. We had great tickets. I mean, we sat down the first base line, could see Mark Grace pretty closely from there, and I think maybe Mike Bielecki got a start that day or something like that. I don't know if that's the right time period or not. I think it maybe was him, but...
Were you close enough to see Grace put his cigarettes out before getting started?
Not quite close enough, so there wasn't that thing to make me into a cynic, that I've become.
Michael, Andy referenced your marriage. We've talked about it. I feel like we talk about it frequently. It's been referenced many times here on the podcast.
It's an unholy union.
Right. Married a lifelong Cardinals fan, season ticket holder. You had a child.
Yes.
And I think you, at one of your appearances here on the podcast, you talked about raising that child and what team that child would root for. Seeing as, how old is she now?
10 months.
And who is she rooting for?
I don't think, she'll probably grow up to not like baseball at all. Yeah. I think that's probably what's going to happen.
Or her parents.
But I did take her to the Labor Day Massacre in St. Louis. Nice. And she had like her little baby Cubs jersey on that matched my jersey. And I was just like, every time the Cubs scored, I just stand up and like throw the baby in the air. I'm sorry, I'll talk about all I want. And just like look around, because it's with other season ticket holders. So it's not like I'm surrounded by Cub fans too.
Right.
And I'm like just looking around, yay, baby, yay. Like no one, I mean, what are they going to do? I got the baby with me. It's pretty awesome.
I mean, that baby was born in 2015. It has to be.
I know.
It's so, destiny.
I mean, you're trying hard to make that baby...
Well, there's Cardinal stuff coming in all the time, and
there
I just put
is.
It in the in the giveaway pile. So,
or in the burn pile. Yeah.
Is Delana is like passionate about the team that baby will root for?
I think she's overly arrogant about the situation. Like, well, the Cardinals are going to win all the time, so obviously she'll be a Cardinal.
That's before her time, though. That's before that baby's time.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
So how many games in the one season of baseball that Lady Baby has been born, how many games has Lady Baby been to?
Well... She's been to 3 Cub Cardinal games and then 3 other regular Cardinal games.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
So six major league games.
That's over here. Two ballparks, right?
Yeah.
And she's 10 months old. Just think about this.
The stakes are high.
She's going to be like, she's going to get sick of it, I think.
She's going to be like, where's the bounty house?
Right. Yeah, you're going to have a lot of money in therapy. You might have to start putting aside for now.
I've never seen that baby in wearing anything Cardinals related, though, I don't
think. Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. You know what? After this season, like Delana might have kind of that like wave of panic.
Like, oh, I better do something about this.
Right, because her team isn't going to do anything.
Yeah.
Right.
They'll be there enough to give the Cubs a little extra practice before they get to the playoffs.
I will say tensions between... Michael and Delana are fun to like get yourself involved in and then back out. I have texts that I will never get rid of that I started a fight with Michael and Delana this past year over the Cardinal Spygate.
Oh, nice.
To where Michael basically called the Cardinals Nazis.
It's National Socialism. At least it's an ethos, Glenn.
And him and Delana like had this great back and forth, and I was just sitting at work just smiling. Now, last week, I wanted to do it again when the more news broke, but I was like,
it was
no.
Just a rogue employee.
Yeah.
I looked her in the face, and I'm like, I knew my entire life the Cardinals were cheaters, and now a judge has also said that to me.
I so wanted to send you both the text to keep it going. I was like, no, I'm gonna back out of the situation and save my next one for a future. I have a question for you. You went to the Cubs convention last week.
Yeah.
Did you, were you there when, for the Jason Hayward reads, angry Cardinals tweets?
No. So that was the late night thing,
oh,
right?
Okay.
I didn't get there. I just went in and kind of checked in on right. Friday night. And so the Dempster thing was going on while I was there. But I left. By the way, so we can get back to that.
Yeah.
But speaking, I mentioned about this on the last podcast episode, but they, during bingo, they gave away, they raffled off a sign that was the late night with Ryan Dempster and then autographed by all the players that were on it. So nice. Like Schwarber, Bryant, Rizzo.
Lester.
Yeah, and Hayward. Yeah.
Okay.
That thing went for $5,100.
Jeez.
Like over $5,000.
It's for Cubs Care, right?
Yeah.
So which,
Cubs Care, by the way, gives their money to the actual charities, whereas Cardinals Care gives less than 10% because they the team makes them rent their offices.
Really?
From so the Cardinals Care have offices within the St. Louis Cardinals organization.
If you can't
offices,
make money on both ends, then that's your bad business
so
model, Glenn.
The St. Louis Cardinals charges rent to Cardinal Care. I'm just throwing that out there. $750,000 a year.
You heard it here first. You guys didn't break that on Awesome 80s podcast.
We did not.
You saved that for this
I
podcast.
I saved that nugget for this. So if you want your money to go to charity, Cubs
right.
Care is the way to go.
Even if you're a Cardinals fan.
Yeah.
Cardinals fan. If you want it to go to the people that need it.
Right.
Buy that game-used memorabilia from the Cubs.
Okay, so where do we want to go with this? Well, okay, since you guys are a movie podcast, kind of. I mean,
yeah,
your
yeah,
80s,
yeah, for the
80s
most part,
movies.
For the most part.
You did your pod shorts
too, right?
or whatever
yeah,
with
yeah.
your TV shows and everything.
Interviews of 80s F-list stars.
We did get Mayor Goldie Wilson, which was pretty
that,
awesome.
That was an amazing. I watched that one live, and he it seemed like technology was like
way past.
Yeah, he was like, I can see you guys.
The fact that he didn't know Back to the Future was even popular until 2010 is still amazes me.
This movie I did one time. I don't know.
And my wife is much younger than me, so every now and then he'll text me, just say, hey, and I'll be like, Mayor Goldie Wilson just texted me, and she's like, I don't care. So then I have to like send it to Michael and look like I'm bragging, but I'm still like so happy every time my phone says Mayor
like,
Goldie Wilson.
How come he's not texting me?
Because that's my, you make me get the people.
But yeah, I just, at the Awesome 80s podcast, we talk about different 80s pop culture things, and mostly like, it's like 90% movies, but we try to get interviews and stuff like that.
But there were a lot of baseball movies in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Field of Dreams, Bull Durham.
Major
the
League.
Natural.
Major League, The Natural.
But for me, though, like there's probably like two other movies like this. But for 8 Men Out, it's like a movie that every time I watch it, it gets a little bit better. Like my favorite 80s movie is Goonies. But the best time I've watched Goonies was a long time ago. Like it's peak.
Right.
But every time I watch 8 Men Out, it keeps getting better and better. I'd say maybe Raising Arizona and then maybe The Big Lebowski. Like every time I watch it, I'm like, it keeps getting
more
better
up.
And
yeah.
better.
I remember liking 8 Men Out a lot, but I haven't seen it for a long time. Maybe
it,
I should revisit.
I guess
it
that's
holds
a,
up.
I guess that's why I give John Cusack a pass for liking the White Sox because he was in the White Sox movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
But he likes the Cubs.
No, he likes the White Sox.
Can I just make an admission here? I've never seen The Natural.
See, okay, and I haven't seen a lot of... I mean, I'm just not a movie guy. I saw that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I've heard that it doesn't hold up.
Yeah, like it kind of has the opposite effect. Like every time you watch it, it keeps getting worse and worse. And you're like, I thought this was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. That's what, because I think they talked about it on I Hate Critics. Mm-hmm. And they all agreed that it was not very good.
It's very melodramatic.
But the ladies liked it.
Ooh, well, because Bob Redford is
right.
handsome.
Bobby's very
Bob
charming. It's his eyes.
See, and I haven't, like, I have to admit, I haven't seen many of the, like, baseball movies that everyone has seen. Like, I think I saw Major League when I was a kid. I haven't seen Bull Durham. No, wait a minute. No, I saw Bull Durham when I was a kid.
Okay.
Bull
and
Durham
the ending
is really
was super
good.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah. I think Bull Durham is probably one of the best baseball movies ever.
Yeah, I didn't watch Bull Durham for a year. I watched it when I was a kid. Didn't get most of it. Just knew it was about baseball.
A lot of adult humor. There was kind of an influx of movies in the 90s, like with Sandlot, Little Big League.
Rookie of the Year.
So do you guys... I really... enjoy The Sandlot. My kids like it. But you guys don't, Michael, you don't have, if I remember right, you don't have a great opinion of that movie, do you?
Is
that
the first Sandlot?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like The Sandlot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
The second one.
Have you seen the second one?
No. Yeah, it's bad.
Wait a minute. Is that the one with the girl?
I thought you said that. Like,
or maybe
there's
a third one.
There's a third
one. Oh, I haven't seen
it. My girls love it. Okay. And it's basically a lot of the same. It's kind of the same movie,
right,
except for it involves, like, there's a girl in it. But my girls actually prefer that one over the original. And they like the original one.
Something that we've developed.
Maybe because it has a girl in it.
Right. Something that we've come across a lot recently, including we just reviewed Little Monsters last week, which when I was a kid was awesome, and I still really enjoyed it. And my wife, who had never seen it, and a few of our listeners wrote us, had never watched it until we were doing the review, and I'm like, this movie's horrible. And I think there's that, if you saw something and it was magical to you as a kid, like, you still look at it through those eyes when you're watching it.
Right.
But whereas now, as an adult, if it's the first time you saw it, you're like, you see it for what it is. Like, this movie is garbage. But I think the same thing can happen with, like, The Sandlot. Like, when I the first time I saw The Sandlot, I was just like, oh my God, I love this movie. I want to do this every day.
And that came out when we were, like, older.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Because it kind of, like, reminded you of the days that you did play on a Sandlot.
Absolutely. And so I think that when you watch something, you don't realize it, but you're still watching it through your eyes of when you first saw it. And if you haven't, so, like, you know, if you're just watching The Sandlot for the first time, even if you're a kid now, you're just like, oh, big dog, you know, things have changed,
right,
you know, but at the time, like, yeah, that dog in the neighborhood was scary.
Yeah.
Freaked me out.
See, and we had, like, an old guy that lived in he was the dog. Like, you know, like, if you pulled the ball to left field, you hit it into his yard, and he had a big fence, and he'd just sit out there and, like, wait for our tennis balls to end up there so he could yell at us and stuff.
Yeah, we had this GTE property by our house. It was, like, this field that GTE owned, and they had, like, a little substation there, and, like, that's where we would play.
What area was that? And where?
It's right behind Jewel.
Oh, GTE had something there?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Is there any, I mean, as far as, like, since the early 90s, it really haven't been, like, I mean, the ones in the 80s, I think, were the best movies as far as baseball movies ever made. Much like Christmas movies, the best Christmas movies were probably made in the 80s. I was thinking also that since then, I would say maybe Moneyball. And then, has anybody seen Sugar?
I love Sugar.
Yeah, I thought Sugar was good.
And then there's the documentary on Netflix, The Battered Bastards.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was
like,
great.
Like, in tears watching. It's like, this is the best thing ever. And I asked my mom for a hat for Christmas from the Mavericks. I'm like, didn't get it. Hopefully, she said I got one more present coming. We'll see.
Well, you mentioned Sugar.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. I kind of wonder if just people around here know about Sugar because it was filmed in the Quad Cities.
You'd think it'd be huge here.
Right. But I mean, but for people that don't live around here, do you want to explain what Sugar was?
So, it's about a Dominican baseball player who, he's really good at baseball, but it's not really super passionate about baseball. But it shows how he goes through the ranks.
Set in current times.
Set in current times. So he's, like, living with an Iowa family that's sponsoring a local ball player. And he's, like, cornfields everywhere. He doesn't speak the language. It's just about, you know, fish out of water situation. It's not really a comedy. It's a good drama. It's actually really good. And it talks about communicating with other players, communicating with coaches, trying, you know, there's different coaches pushing him, and they're trying to make him a better ball player, but it's the communication just really isn't there. And then I don't want to ruin the movie, but he has a different passion that isn't baseball, and it kind of drives him to try to become a citizen.
One-time host of this podcast, Matt Vito, is in the movie.
Oh, cool.
I think he grounds out to second.
Right before Sugar
he does
comes
make
to
contact.
Yeah. So was this movie about Castro?
No.
Starlin Castro?
I think it was like any player, you know, like the any player from the Dominican type.
Right.
But the directors did like a ton of research.
Well, I'm thinking if you show any talent at all, you're pushed by your family, interest society. Like,
right.
Go make that money for your family. Go to America and cash in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of focus on that in the movie.
Yeah.
So it's not
a very good movie.
Suzanne Schubert.
It's a really, really good movie. But Moneyball, I really enjoyed Moneyball. There's one thing in the movie that really annoys me, though. I think I've told you. Like,
not enough Brad Pitt working out.
No. I love that there's no love interest.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's really cool that, like, they made a baseball movie other than love with baseball.
Yeah.
But there's no female love interest. His daughter's in there.
Well, I think the daughter relationship's that's what it's it's a family relationship, and that's what's most important to him. I don't know.
But Izzy's driving away. They play. He listens to a song. His daughter gives him a CD, and he listens to a song, and it was like that song was released like before the time when the movie was set, 2002 or whatever.
So you mean like released after the movie,
right? It was released in like 2008 or something like that. So for some reason that
it's
really
like Marty
annoys
McFly
me.
Going back in time and inventing rock and roll.
Out of all the music,
show, I have a new rant on that.
Out of all the music recorded up until that point, they couldn't find a song that fit that moment.
Right? Yeah.
So you brought it back to the future.
Okay, go ahead.
So I was told I'm under the understanding that you guys understand that you guys were not happy with the 2015 Back to the Future correlation. I get it.
2015 was the year of Back to the Future.
I was happy. I was happy with it until about Cubs Convention 2015.
Right. Didn't take long into the 2015 like, at
about
all.
About 2 weeks.
About 2 weeks, I was happy about it. And then about 50 weeks, I was miserable.
So the only reason I liked it was because I love obscure Cubs, like not general Cubs merchandise.
Like the shirt you're wearing right now.
I'm wearing now. Like I love different things like that. So South Bend had Back to the Future uniforms for one game.
Yeah.
And I was calling their PR lady and like emailing her, just trying to see what I could get my hands on. She goes, well, we're going to auction them. And I was like, at that point, I was out because I knew there's no, they're going to go crazy, you know, like late night with Ryan Dempster. People are going to pay $1,000 for these things.
Gleyber Torres.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just that I really got tired of hearing about it.
Oh, I agree with
you. Especially as the season went on, like, in August and September and October, like you couldn't go anywhere. If you were wearing anything Cubs related, you'd be like, hey, I heard that in Back to the Future, they said the Cubs are going to win.
Well, yeah, and everybody acted like it was this esoteric knowledge that, you know, like they were privy to and like nobody else knew about it. Like
it was something that they were able to use to get the casual fans involved.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Wrigley or the Cubs as a whole don't need something gets casual. If they win, the bandwagon gets full. Everyone breaks out their, you know, their 1997 Cubs shirt and
dust it off.
Yeah.
See, I got tired of it when I mentioned Cubs convention. It's because a guy got up and he was maybe in his 50s, dressed like Marty McFly, holding a fake hoverboard, and his question, I believe it was to the ownership, maybe the front office, was for them to check out a movie idea that he had or something like that.
Even his website, I think.
Maybe that's what it was.
He just wanted to get involved. Like he
had a lot of ideas.
He had the look. Didn't he even have, did he have a DeLorean?
Yes, I believe he did.
Yeah, he saw his angle.
Right.
And he ran with it.
Right.
So that was the proper forum to try to get linked up with the Cubs was, a session at Cubs convention for fan Q&A.
Some people woo. Some people have hoverboards. Everyone has a gimmick.
What was that bar downtown in Chicago? It's like an 80s themed bar, and they're trying to give away a DeLorean. If they
I don't remember the name of it, but yes. I believe the Black Cat sent us pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But I guess I wanted to point out, furthermore, that there is a giant Cubs impact and influx of Cubs, especially after 84, in 80s cinema, just Cubs situations.
Ferris Bueller.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I guess it was June 5th, 1985, between the Cubs and the Braves. Foul ball hit by Claudel Washington is the one that he was actually supposed to catch. I wanted to start with 1980 with the Blues Brothers when they told everyone their address, 1060 West Addison. Anthony Michael Hall in both National Lampoon's Vacation and Weird Science. He wore a T-shirt in Vacation, and then he wore it. When he wasn't wearing a bra on his head, he was wearing a Cubs hat in his bedroom.
Well,
that's kind of like Corey.
The first three movies you've referenced all have a common denominator. So the man who wrote them was John Hughes.
Yeah, I was a White Sox fan.
He's talking about the Cubs.
A self-hating White Sox fan. Obviously, he really wanted to be a Cubs fan. There's a little brother in 16 Candles, the little brother they grew up to be in Dutch.
So John Hughes.
John Hughes movie.
Both of those
he wore
you just mentioned for John Hughes.
But also Brewster's Millions. He had a Cubs jersey he wore all the time. It was the only team smart enough to sign him in Brewster's Millions.
Have you seen Brewster's Millions?
I believe I've seen the first scene. Doesn't a train go through the outfield?
Yes.
Okay, that's all I remember.
But Uncle Buck, when he's getting the call,
John Hughes,
right.
He's getting the call, he's wearing an Ernie Banks jersey.
Well, and isn't his apartment like right outside Wrigley Field?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And then in UHF, Bob, the sidekick in it, he's also wearing a Cubs hat. In Perfect Strangers, Family Matters, and television, like they
don't be ridiculous.
And there's kind of a '80s carryover as well in Taking Care of Business.
See, I love that movie because that was Mark Grace's screen debut. You actually got to see Grace bat.
Well, I remember they had the new jerseys, like the gray jerseys.
Yeah, no.
No, I'm telling you, they had the gray jerseys.
No, they had the blue.
We have a dispute.
I'm telling you, either one of the gray.
We will go home and watch this Jim Belushi movie. And
according to Jim, it's gray jersey. And then also in V.I. I literally like V.I. Warshawski.
No one in the world has ever said
V.I. that. V.I. Warshawski's got a Kathleen Turner. You told me you love Kathleen Turner. Look at me in the eyes and say you don't love Kathleen Turner.
The movie's horrible. That's not her fault.
I prefer Kathleen Turner over Drive.
But her apartment is one of the buildings next to Wrigley, and she also is watching a Cub game during the actual movie.
Yeah, don't think I hate Kathleen Turner. I don't like.
I guess when you guys think of the 1980s and the Chicago Cubs, like what do you think of? Like when you close your eyes, like what do you think of?
Sadly, Leon Durham, and I don't know why.
Yeah. Oh, man, I loved Leon Durham.
The Bull.
For some reason, like, when you said that, I wanted to know, like, I wasn't going to, like, I wanted whatever popped in my head right then to be my answer, and it was the Torco sign.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
That's the first thing I thought of.
I was thinking about making one of those for the outfield ball, too. I think that'd be kind of cool.
That would be beautiful. Are you going to let everybody else answer?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. I get excited. I'm talking about the Cubs.
Now you see now the you pain see, like, I live in.
This is the hell that's our podcast. I'm sorry.
I'm closing my eyes right now.
Another thing I think about, Andy, a moment that you and I shared. Mm-hmm. Do you remember watching that Cubs game and we heard Steve Stone swear air?
Oh, yeah, we did.
Do you remember exactly what he said?
Yeah, he said, I remember specifically him saying, "These damn Cubs."
He thought they then, cut away to a commercial.
Right. And then paraphrasing the rest, like they can't do anything right, you know, just kind of like ranting about how they shouldn't have lost that game. Yeah, it was weird. He thought the broadcast had been cut, which the video had. It was just audio. Yeah,
right. I wonder if that clip is out there anywhere.
I guarantee it is. I don't know why, but earlier this year, for some reason, I think it was the Cubs-Pirates fight. It may not have been it lasted like 22 minutes. I might have been the Reds. And it became like people kept sharing it. So I watched it. And it's just like 22 minutes of Harry just being like, I don't know what the hell's going on.
Oh, yeah. That one is awesome.
Yeah. I watched that a couple
I can't
times.
Remember who. Yeah. I don't remember who it was against. Yeah. The YouTube video is literally a half hour long.
I think it was the Reds. Yeah. And there's one play. Like, there's a dispute. With the umps, there's a fight. There's
they break it up, and then everybody goes away, and then they come back out.
Yeah,
it was remember, insane. Right?
Yeah. Michael, did you want to answer your question?
I don't think I'd let you answer.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
That's right.
No, I was just going to say maybe like a Dawson home run swing or a Ryan Sandberg batting stance, the Sean-o-meter for some reason.
Yeah.
Man, I was looking at Sean Dunstan's career. Wasn't that good?
No.
I looked at that, okay, too.
If you want to talk about a player being boosted by Harry Carey loving him, it was Sean Dunstan.
Well, he's got
a strong arm.
When he smiles, he's got like 87 teeth in there. That's Sean Dunstan.
But how many times a game did we hear about Dunstan's cannon for an arm?
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter what he did.
You know what? If he pitched, he could throw 98 miles an hour. You remember that as a kid?
He was never above two.
Yeah, but the funny thing is it's carried over to his son now.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, honestly, I don't know if I've ever seen Sean Jr. play.
I feel like we have maybe once, or maybe he was on the bench for a game we were at or something like that. But, yeah, Dunstan Sr., never above two WAR in his entire career, not even his All-Star seasons, I don't think.
His two WAR was in 89.
Yeah.
Which is why it was so exciting for
that
Michael.
And that makes it so depressing. The Sean-o-meter, it makes it so depressing that they had that. Like, they were keeping track of the career 269 hitter.
I was just going to say, I seem to remember it being like in the 260s.
I was going
to
say 268, so I know it's somewhere right there.
It's all about marketing. It's like the new Japanese player. It's all about marketing. But I remember meeting him at the Cub Caravan, and he was like, "Hey, what's up, man? One. What's up, kid?" Like, cause I remember, I was like, "Santa Claus isn't real. Easter Bunny's not real." My dad's like, "Less than a mile away, the Cubs are going to be at the Bone Student Center in Normal, Illinois, at Illinois State."
So,
and I'm like, "Yeah, right, Dad." So I took my hat and I put it in my coat. I'm like, "You're not getting me that. No, no, you're not getting me this time, Dad."
Yeah, the Cubs are going to be in my neighborhood.
So,
right?
Was that the Sean Dunstan, Greg Maddux, Jim Frey year?
Yeah, was Dave Nelson there, too?
If he was, I didn't get his autograph.
Okay.
It was a traveling petting zoo with baby, and then I remember my baby bears in the gym.
I just
remember Jack,
I just remember when Jack Brickhouse was there. My dad's like, "That's Jack Brickhouse." I'm like, "It's not Harry Carey. I don't even know who that guy is."
Who's that nobody?
Weirdly, the first time I knew who Jack Brickhouse was because he was on WCW Pro Chicago Wrestling. So he was a commentator in the late 80s on weekly wrestling for WCW. And I'm like, "Oh, he was a Cubs guy too?" Oh, it's because he did the Let There Be Lights. Like, he was one of the ones who would turn the lights on in 88.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And that was. I'm like, "Oh, that's the guy from the wrestling show I watched."
But for me, though, like, I think the moment when your life flashes before your eyes and you're in the old folks' home and you're going to pass away, I think Mitch Williams falling off the mound towards their base, I think, like, that's in there. Like, it's not going anywhere.
It's seared into our memories.
The one
with
thing
his blue glove.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
The one thing I always have a problem with is I love bad Chicago Cubs third baseman. Like, Vance Law.
There's a lot of them.
Love them. Oh, yeah. But I always talk about Keith Moreland playing third, and people say, "Well, he was a left fielder." And
to
I know
me,
he was.
Third.
But to me,
yeah,
he's
I picture
third
him
baseman.
Playing. Yeah, if it like, I think of him as a third baseman.
Yeah, and like, I guess maybe people who are older are like, "No, he never played third." I'm
I also
like,
think
yes,
of him
did.
As a very bad broadcaster.
Horrible. Yeah, I was gonna do it in French. I can't even do it. Well, you know, y'all. What's up on our magical list of fun, Michael?
Thousands of things to go.
Well, Can we? You mentioned Vance Law.
Okay.
Another highlight of my childhood. My cousin, female cousin Jennifer, not a baseball person. I have two baseball memories of her. The first one is we would play in this little parking lot where it was kind of like you'd hit the ball off of a church, and where it landed was like what, how many, you know, if it was a single or double or triple or whatever. And I remember her hitting like just a total fluke. Hitting it over the church, and she screamed touchdown. So I remember that. And then the other one is that she thought that Vance Law's name was Van Slaw.
So that was during a period of Expos, Cubs. Like, mm-hmm. I don't remember anyone the Cubs, except for one, the Cubs ever traded to Montreal. But we always got, like, we got Dawson, who's free agent. Then we got Vance Law. I don't even know how he appeared. There was another pitcher, too. And then we got, of course, the Martinez for Webster trade.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was at my parents' lake house in Indiana when I heard that come over the radio, because we still got 720 there. And I listened to the games, and they're like, and I remember, and there was no internet for me to look up stats, but I remember in my head, like, I'm going back doing, I was a real stat guy. And I'm like, these guys are basically the identical player, except that Davey Martinez is a lot more attractive. Why did we trade for Mitch Webster? And I think I really liked the fact that he didn't wear batting gloves. And I couldn't understand the trade at all at the time, because, you know, I didn't know what I know now. But
and when you say you looked at the stats, means you pulled out each of them, each of their
baseball cards, right?
This is up to date,
right. But like, there was no real advantage to the, like, this trade, and at the time, it bothered me so much because I could not understand why they would make this trade. Now I know.
Hey, that's we don't need to say anything else. I think that's all we need to say.
So what about 89, Michael?
Do we want to do 89 versus 2015?
I mean, I've got some stuff, but I don't know.
I mean, I got some.
Do we have to do like
unfurls a scroll? Like a,
it's usually like an hour, right?
Yeah, we'll
give or
we'll,
take.
We'll trim it up.
Okay.
Well, I'm just saying we have like 20 minutes. Of time, roughly. Is that about?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Okay. We're good. So you took offense to? I mean, I think I maybe heard from you within hours.
Well, yeah,
after
he was sitting at home
releasing,
waiting for you to post it, and then he walked around his house for about 2 hours
Corey
to get the anger
anything.
Out.
Corey.
So you did not appreciate that.
Well, I'm thinking
that statement that, that I guess 15 like, was more exciting. Like,
there's those old school Cubs fans have been fans since like the 50s or 60s, and then like especially like after 69 and 70, like I'm sure they had an influx of baseball fans just showing up at their ballpark. Like they had the upper deck closed a lot of times at Wrigley Field, and then all of a sudden it's a whole new ballpark after the Cubs are winning. And then especially after like 84, like I could see certain Cub fans being like, those new Cub fans, those aren't real Cub fans.
Right.
And then, so I mean,
oh yeah, I guess it's called, just, it's called Crazy Hat Lady at yes. Cubs convention.
And I'm also thinking maybe it's just like my old man yelling at the clouds situation. Like I apologize. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, first, what did you get, a text, an email? Like what?
I don't remember how did, I mean, it must've been a text.
Did you sense his
although
anger?
Michael, you're like the only person I ever talk on the phone to. Okay. And how often do we talk?
Once a month? Once every 2 months?
That's yeah. good. Yeah. Andy and I talked on the phone for the first time. Like, wait, what were we? I don't even remember what we were. I had to call
spring
you.
Spring training.
Oh, yeah, spring training. Yeah. And I was like,
ooh, a phone call.
I know. And then he's like, hello. And I was like, holy cow, we haven't talked on the phone in like 3 years. I don't really remember how to do this.
Were you able to sense his anger?
Because
it usually comes off very nice. But then he'll have a couple jabs right in.
Well,
there.
Here's
that seems
how I
passive aggressive.
Here's how I like it's kind of like a been thinking about something. And then you can like it kind of ramps up a little bit and I just picture him pacing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I picture that he has laid out his thoughts in front of him like he has for this episode.
No big deal. I'm sorry.
It's probably the 50 of drafts.
Probably
the 50 of drafts.
Like 2 or 3 drafts. It's fine. I'm sorry.
So
that stood out to you right away.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, like when I think like every season I like as I get like halfway through the season, I'm like, well, this season's like the 99 season. Like after like the 2009 season, that felt like the 99 season. Like after the playoffs,
right.
People are playing crappy again. It really still got people at the ballpark, but we're still pretty crappy.
He dropped the ball. He dropped the ball.
So I was like trying to equate seasons here. I'm like, this is like the 89 season because they had a lot of young people and they had playing over their heads.
All right, so let's set the table. So in 89, you had Jerome Walton, rookie.
Second rounder,
your starting center fielder. Now you're starting left fielder?
Dwight Smith.
It was Dwight Smith who came in second in the rookie of the
third rounder.
And
but at the beginning of the season, Mitchell was playing, or the guy from Montreal, what's his name?
Oh, Mitch Webster.
Mitch Webster was playing. Jerome Walton was playing, and Andre Dawson were playing. And then all three of them got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lloyd McClendon started playing. Dwight Smith was playing. And then center field, Doug DiCenzo.
Yeah.
Yep. So did he – is he still with us, or did he
– No, he's coaching. I thought Doug DiCenzo was coaching last year.
I honestly don't remember.
Yeah, he's
I thought
coaching in some capacity.
Something involving him was in the news like a year ago. I don't remember where it was.
There are tons of like I think there's a ton of parallels between these two teams.
Absolutely.
Like you mentioned they're young. They were young and especially on offense.
Yeah.
You know, so you had that came up with in the system, you had Damon Berryhill and Joe Girardi, both catchers, Dunston, Grace, Dwight Smith, Jerome Walton. You had those. But then the pitchers, you had Bielecki, who they traded for, mm-hmm. Kilgus, they mm-hmm. traded for him, Les Lancaster, we'll get into him later, Sutcliffe, Mitch Williams, Scott Sanderson,
and like
Greg
Maddux.
All of them are traded or signed or you know free agents,
not from the farm,
right?
Except Maddux,
So Maddux, Grace, Smith, and Walton were your basically only home. Well, Dunston. Right. So those were your out of. 25 players.
But we had mostly. I'm gonna just real quick because we didn't really have any farm system. It's very, very similar to where we are today. Like we didn't have a farm system in the 90s. We didn't have a farm system from the beginning of farm systems until the 82 when Dallas Green started to build a farm system. We had like Palmeiro, Moyer, Girardi, Grace, Walton, Smith, Maddux.
And I used to go to Peoria Chiefs games as a kid. And in 80, man, what year would that have been? 84 maybe. I think it was 84. Palmeiro was there. Palmeiro, Girardi.
I feel like Dwight Smith got drafted in 84.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't have been that high.
What?
Like that 84-85 Peoria Chiefs team was like pretty incredible.
And well, I mean, just to have players that are good enough to make the major leagues in your farm system is an accomplishment.
Right.
What years, I think maybe it was before that, where the Chiefs went to be, where the Angels farm system for a couple years.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because I started going to games there in like 83 or 84.
So maybe it was 80, because I think Wally Joyner played there. So
yes,
like,
yeah, he did.
The Quad City 81. Angels were a thing for a while. Like
right.
They were an right. Angels affiliate.
So when did Madden coach in Peoria?
So yeah, it must have been like 80, 81 that the Chiefs and... were, or the Peoria team was the Angel, the Chiefs were Angels affiliated. So let's also not minimize the impact of the Palmeiro trade, the Palmeiro Jamie Moyer trade had on this team, because you had, wasn't Curtis Wilkerson?
He came.
In that trade, Lloyd McClendon, Mitch Williams. So, I mean, they got, I don't remember, that's just four of the six. I don't remember the other two, but they got six players for Palmeiro and Jamie Moyer. And I met Palmeiro 2 weeks later at ISU, 2 weeks after he got traded. And I was so excited until he got traded, and I was kind of bummed. I got his autograph still. I was kind
of
bummed about
it. Just, it's so, he's got like a cool baseball name, like especially when a little kid, like Rafael Palmeiro.
Well, he had that stash.
Yeah.
So, but like the 89 team would not have happened if it wasn't for that trade. Because they had, it brought a lot of energy, which I think the trade happened in 80s, between 87 and 88, or maybe between 88 and 89. But that trade brought them a lot of new energy. You had Zimmer,
right?
The Joe Madden, if you want to make the comparison, the grizzled baseball vet,
the
coach.
Unorthodox manager. I've got a Don Zimmer says Cub fans are fatheads, and Madden says players should be mentally frisky. it's just, and they both had like rosters loaded with kids. Like 2015, we got Bryant, Russell, Soler, Baez, and then Rizzo. And then 89, we had Walton Smith, Williams, Maddox, and Grace. And, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, though, I think a lot of people that are like trying to be like kind of cautious about being optimistic about this 2015 team kind of draw parallels to like a team like that was very young, agreed. A lot of excitement. But I mean, in looking at it, like Rizzo is a lot better than Grace.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so in 89, Grace is
kind of a different player, though, too, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, a different player, but yeah.
So Grace's WAR that season was 3.9, and Rizzo's in 15 was 6.2.
Man, oh my God. Grace in 89 got on base, his OBP was like 408.
Yeah. Dunston, I mean, Addison Russell was better. both those numbers, I guess I didn't realize how Russell had a 3.3 WAR, which... really surprised me.
Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised.
And Dunston, that
now,
was
yeah.
his career high, too.
Right.
So it's just crazy to think of, like, you know, and then, I mean, their bases, Vance Law versus Chris Bryant.
Yeah.
Let's not even show those
well,
numbers.
I'm a big Vance Law guy, so I see positive.
No. He was below replacement
you have
level.
Signed Vance Law thing over there?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Okay.
Oh, I'm stealing that.
Vance Law.
Vance Law.
But, like, yeah, so, Walton, you know, the outfield. Position. I mean, Dawson is obviously at this point obviously more proven and better than Soler.
Right.
But I mean, I think Schwarber, Dwight Smith had a 2.3 WAR in 89. Schwarber had 1.7, but he only had 273.
Right. He's going to get more opportunities. And then, center field's not even a question. Hayward versus Walton. what was Walton's WAR? Do you have
1.9?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and Fowler this last year was 2.2.
I think actually Dwight Smith had a higher WAR than Jerome Walton did that year.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but he wasn't the rookie of the year.
Smith had a good year.
Well, it was that streak.
Okay.
And that batting stance.
What was it, 30 games? Or
30 games, 30 yeah. streak. Yeah, I guess in 1990, everyone thought, you know, we'll have experience, we'll be back next year, and they'll have the added talent of George Bell.
Yeah.
Bring that in. Especially like him and Dawson were both 87 MVPs. So like in your mind, you're like,
we're going to be awesome.
I kind of forgot about like
where was
the
Bell
hype
playing?
Around that.
I think Toronto.
Yeah, I think
no,
so.
No, I mean, what position? Because Dawson was still there, right? And when
maybe
he
played left. I thought he played left.
No, they didn't bench Dwight Smith.
I thought they just platooned because Jerome Walton was so crappy.
Well, Bell wasn't playing center.
I know. Well, I'm saying maybe him and Dwight Smith and Jerome Walton platooned.
I'm gonna
I
look
don't know.
It up.
I can't remember.
Yeah,
all right.
Please.
And then I'll edit it so I just knew it off the top of my head.
Perfect.
Let's see. He played in 90 left field.
So Dwight Smith was
146 games in left field.
Wow.
Okay. Just asking. Yeah, but it feels like in 1990, they didn't have their minor leagues to pull from anymore. Like, the legs were caught on from underneath of them. Like, they literally did not have any minor leaguers coming. They had no new talent to pull from.
Right.
And the only thing they had was hoping this ramshackle team they threw together in 89 could hold together. But now we actually have a real minor league system. We've got the best minor league catcher in baseball in our minor league system.
Right. Well, and I think these players are, I mean, they're just better.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and I guess it's, and you wonder like what people thought. I mean, obviously now the information that we have at our fingertips is, you know,
it's infinite.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so like now we can look back at that team, but I wonder like, if you listen to the Cubs on the radio and maybe you read Vineline, if it existed in 89,
it did.
Okay. you know, you probably thought those kids, your Dwight Smith and Jerome Walton and Sean Dunstan and Grace, like you thought that was who we think, you know, on that same level as what we think for Schwarber, Bryant, Rizzo.
But these guys are twice as good.
Right.
They are. So I have a couple. First, like, in, yeah, 89 WAR was a game I played with my grandma. I, you know, no one knew a WAR in 89. But do you think, Michael, maybe your love of them, and I loved them too, I love the 89 team a lot, was because it was unexpected? Like, they were horrible in 87. They were pretty bad in 88, but in 89, out of nowhere, they were just good.
And it was a really, in fact, I wish I wanted to watch it before we recorded this. I have the Boys of Zimmer video. Yes. And I really wanted to watch it just to kind of like, you know, to go back to what you were saying, Michael, with that being a very fun team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I think we were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is which team was more fun. And I wanted to kind of relive those fun moments because I do remember there being a lot of fun moments. And then I thought, like, I started thinking about, is it the access that made 2015 so fun?
And, like with the Twitter and we are
just
good.
Everything. The fact that I could watch every, and I did watch almost every single game in 2015, that when the broadcast ended in 1989, that's all I knew until the next broadcast started.
Right.
Where now you could watch the press conferences, you could have access to the players on Twitter and everything like that. And so you wonder, like, how much fun was the 89 team having behind the scenes?
It's true.
That's a good point.
Yeah. We can watch them now get the poor lady from CSN drunk just off of pouring champagne on her over and over again. But
poor girl.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's
but there were no, you know, there was no bubblegum rally bucket hats.
No giant hand. 18,
yeah. No hand. There was a guy walking around Cubs convention.
Yeah.
An old guy with the Herrera hands on a batting helmet. But
he will be missed.
What I liked is the great 80s haircuts. We got Les Lancaster, Jeff Pico, Paul Gilgeous, and Mitch Williams all had the awesome mullets. They're fantastic. Right.
Jeff Pico came over in that Palmeiro
okay.
trade, too.
No.
I believe he was homegrown.
Was he?
Let me look here.
No, you probably. I mean, I trust you. I just, for some reason, thought he came over. No, I want to know who came over.
Plus, lots of members-only jackets, if you watch any of the interviews and stuff from the Cubs. So that's members-only jackets galore.
The only three pitchers on that 89 team that were homegrown were Maddox, Joe Kramer, who pitched 3.2 innings that season, and Jeff Pico.
Huh. No, I won't. I'm going to have to do some research.
Can we talk about the three starting pitchers in the playoffs and then the two for in 2015? Like, because, I mean, we had Maddox, Sutcliffe, and Bielecki, 19 wins, 16 wins, 18 wins. Maddox had 2.95 ERA, Sutcliffe had 3.66, Bielecki had 3.14. Maddox had a 5 WAR, Bielecki had a 4.3, Sutcliffe had a 3.2. And this year, Arrieta blew him away with an 8.7, but Lester had a 3.2, and that is worse than the worst Cubs pitcher in 89. And you're like, I feel like, it feels like we're, with Lackey, we're almost ready to go for a playoff if it happened tomorrow. Like, if we got those pitchers, it'd be good to go in the playoffs with those three people. But we need some, we need to trade for somebody, but I don't think it needs to happen tomorrow. We need to get some homegrown people, but I don't know if that's a reality. In 84, we traded Joe Carter for Sutcliffe. Do you think that might be a situation that's going to happen for the Cubs with their pitchers?
So you're saying like a Soler or Baez?
Schwarber.
I don't think so. So the Cubs, the front office was asked, like, basically, will Schwarber be traded? And they said no.
No.
I mean, I was kind of surprised, and maybe it's just kind of a, maybe it wasn't like a, no, we will absolutely, obviously if the price is right, sure they will, but
right.
But I don't think there's, I just don't, I don't think they're going to trade Schwarber, but well, go ahead.
Well, one conversation that's come up this week more and more is the DH and the NL.
Right.
And even Rob Manfred said that it's looking more and more within the next couple of years that that's going to happen. And
so there's where, that's where Schwarber fits in.
Yeah, that's where he's going to land if that does happen. Real quick, it was Paul Kilgus who came over.
Oh, okay.
And also Steve Wilson, who I don't know if he ended up in the majors at all.
The
final two.
The suicide squeezes by Zimmer in '89. I couldn't believe. I didn't realize that was a thing. I didn't realize you could even do that. Like, you're a little kid. You don't understand what's happening.
How come he didn't swing at
that
ball?
Yeah, I didn't understand. How did we just win this game? Like, he was totally off kilter. He was like a cartoon character. Like, him and Harry Carey at that same time were almost on the same level for me. Like, these larger-than-life, like, giant, like, caricatures of humans. Like, they were amazing.
Yeah. But you mentioned, like, the number, you know, the war from the starting pitchers.
Yeah.
But that 89 team had a great bullpen,
too.
I believe they were the best in the NL.
Yeah. And do we want to talk
Mitch
about
Williams.
Mr. Lancaster?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Liz Lancaster. About
it. Like, he had the, come on, guys. Like, it's the elephant in the room. Like, gotta, let's most, address it.
He had like one of the most amazing seasons ever.
I didn't even remember that. I mean, I remembered, obviously, Liz Lancaster. But, you know, when I got Michael's 18 pages of notes for this episode, I looked
We've
at
already cut it in half, by the way. Right.
So I looked at Liz Lancaster and like, it was great. So he pitched 42 innings of relief. His ERA plus, so the average is 100. His was 279,
wow,
which is crazy.
Yeah.
So so I visited the play index at Baseball Prospectus, and I searched for pitchers since that 89 season, including that 89 season, that have pitched 70 innings or more and sorted by ERA plus. And Liz Lancaster that season ranks 23rd on the list.
I'm out of like 3,000.
Well, yeah, who knows?
That's 25 years.
Yeah.
I didn't remember it being that good. So he had a great season. Not a good postseason, though.
No.
He pitched in three games in the series against the Giants, and he pitched six innings and gave up four runs.
No Cub pitcher had a good postseason.
Well, or is it just that Will Clark? Like, that's like, so the postseason was just a, that Giants series is just a blur to me. Like, I don't, all I remember is Will Clark.
Because it went by so fast. So, yeah, I mean, it was just domination from start to finish. I was in sixth grade at that point, I believe, and we had after school sports. And
game five was during the daytime.
Okay, but okay. I'm not talking about that.
Go ahead.
So if it rained, it was that was during our baseball area of after school sports, and if it rained, we played inside in the gym. So home runs were easier because then it became a wiffle ball game and not like a hard baseball game, and one day I hit a grand slam, which was my first ever after school sports home run, and then I hit a solo shot. And when I walked out, all my friends were waiting for me, and they gave me a Will Clark nuggie. They're like, it's Will Clark, knowing that how upset that would make me. Like, they took my proudest sports achievement of that time in my life and ruined it by calling me Will Clark, because it was as that series
That's
was happening.
That's messed up.
He's got a certain way about the way he stands and he walks, and he just upsets me.
I loved it. Like, I don't think there's anything more beautiful in this world than a left-handed swing. You know, Grace's was
Ken
pretty.
Ken Griffey Jr., man.
Yeah, Ken Griffey Jr., but Will Clark had such a beautiful swing.
And I hated it.
I don't
it
want to talk about it.
But back to Liz Lancaster.
Yes.
So that was his age 27 season, the 89 season, and he was done at 31. He was done just a few years later, ended his career with the Cardinals. Maybe that's why he was because, we were talking about Liz Lancaster before that. We started recording, and none of us could remember why his career ended.
Finally, the Cubs were like, can we get a little less Lancaster around here?
Hey-o!
So he's now the pitching coach for the Williamsport Crosscutters.
Okay. One thing I think is probably going to be similar to last year's team and then future Cubs teams is that the Cubs versus the Giants, the Cubs had 500 more at-bats on their bench. Like, their bench had 500 more at-bats. Like, they had more interchangeable parts in that 89 season. And it feels like that's the way last year's team was, and that's the way all the future teams are going to be. Like, you're gonna,
at least under Madden.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
There was a game where Mark Grace punched Frank Dipino
And then he ended up, and Grace ended up separating his shoulder. There was like this fight in Busch Stadium.
But oh, was that when DePino was on the Cardinals?
Yeah, yeah.
He became a Cub.
It was
after just like,
no,
that.
It was 88. He was Cub.
Cub and 89 was a Cardinal.
But then I guess to me, Lloyd McClendon was like kind of the super utility situation. Like he played first, played outfield, he played catcher,
he played
like,
every position except for pitcher.
Yeah.
Only to be topped by Doug DeCenzo, who pitched in the Windy City Classic as well. He played all nine positions in that game.
Did you know that Lloyd McClendon, he played in the Little League World Series? And I believe in the championship game, I may be totally wrong in when or where this happened, or the number that I'm about to throw out, but I believe he went 6-for-6 with 6 home runs.
Wow.
That's insane.
I'm going to look it up now. So that
that's sick.
Here come the tweets.
I did watch most of the Boys of Zimmer is on the YouTube, and I watched it. And one of the fun facts was that Mitch Williams married an older woman that made him give up his IROC Z28. I felt a very 80s situation.
May as well have clipped the mullet.
Yeah.
Did he ever pitch again after the Philadelphia World Series? Or was that it?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, he homered in 5 consecutive at-bats. And that earned him the nickname Legendary Lloyd, which doesn't really flow off the tongue.
No. Or fit him.
I guess a couple more things, but the leading hitting rookie for the game, Dwight Smith, he sang the national anthem that year.
I remember
that.
Yeah.
He sang the national anthem.
He had a voice like an angel.
In his house, singing came first, then the Lord, then baseball. The team, it had multiple injuries, it had multiple interchangeable parts, but I'm hoping that this year, hopefully, I want some of the Cubs to take more days off. It feels like maybe Rizzo,
especially Rizzo, yeah,
and
yeah.
Bryant can maybe take some more days off. Like, I feel like maybe 3 weeks, not altogether, but like a week here, and a week there. For Rizzo in 2015, he was just flat. Like, he wasn't doing, but I mean.
But they needed him.
Yeah.
So, the two biggest differences I see between the 89 team and 2015. Our first, 89 team had an awesome rap song that 2015 did not produce. So that's something they need to work on.
They should have known. They should have known Chicago sports history. They should have known enough.
You have to have.
They should have had a song.
The second being that in 1990, the Cubs were not good. But in 2016, they're going to be awesome. I hope.
That's perfect.
What? Speaking prophetically.
So, I agree with you. Michael, I want you to lay out your argument of why the 89 team is better. I am disagreeing
with
you. You
are, in your tone.
But I'm interested in this. I'm interested in what you had to say. I could be swayed.
It kind of skewed my views of what being a Cub fan or like what the Cubs could be, because it kind of created like unrealistic expectations for future Cubs teams. Like there's
the 89 team.
Yeah. There's like multiple injuries. Like Dawson went down, Grace went down, whole outfield went down. And especially like Damon Berryhill was the man, like him and Jody Davis and Jim Sundberg, like they were the catchers. And then
Galesburg's own Jim Sundberg.
And then Damon Berryhill, he's like, this is the man, this is our catcher. And then they get Rick Rona and Girardi. All of a sudden they get thrown into the situation. Rick Rona was the catcher of game one of the playoffs. All of a sudden they get thrown into this situation where there's no Damon Berryhill and there's two rookies catching on this playoff-bound team.
Mm-hmm.
They overcame that. I guess they had 9 wins in the spring training, but still made it to the playoffs.
Your argument's weak so far.
Well, it's like they had this team of like rookies and cast-offs and like injury-plagued players, and they made the playoffs. Like it was... Go ahead.
So let me translate for Michael. I've known him
for
20 years. He's saying they were the lovable losers who finally won one. They were the team who wasn't supposed to win.
Much like every 80s sports movie.
They overcame the odds and did it. Whereas 2015...
They were the better team.
There you go. I did it a lot shorter than he would have.
Oh, thank you, Glenn.
Okay, so this is why you're wrong. No, here is why the 2015 team was better.
Okay.
We knocked the Cardinals out of the playoffs.
Oh, that's all you needed.
They won in the playoffs. They won in the playoffs.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, but the 89 team actually got closer to the World Series. By one game. But so, yeah, I talked about this before, but it definitely felt like after they beat the Cardinals, it was their high watermark since like 1945.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. They blew it in 84. They blew it. In 89, they didn't even blow it. They just weren't in it.
Yeah.
98.
Well, see, like, I went through the stats, and the Cubs weren't that worse than the Giants. Like, it was like, in my mind, the Giants are these giant, awesome team that was blew it, but they showed it in the playoffs.
Kevin Mitchell and Will Clark.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were monsters. But like,
yeah.
I have to disagree with you now. I'm going through my head. Is that really... Was 89 really the high water mark up until 2015 or
2015? No, I'd say 1984 was the high water mark until 2015.
I think 2003 was, and I hate think so to invoke too. That year.
Yeah,
but
I don't even want to talk
about. Yeah, but when were you more excited about the? That was the most excited I had ever been about the Cubs was 2003.
Yeah, I try to block it out.
I know, but and I hate to invoke it, but. For factual purposes.
Had to be done.
It had to be done.
Had to be done. Thank you.
That was the high watermark up until, this last year was awesome. But we know this team is growing. However, if 2003 taught us anything, it's nothing is for sure the next year.
Right.
Because, damn it, if we didn't think they were all going to
especially like on
go to the World
on
Series.
On paper, like that 2014 might have been the best Cubs team on paper.
Oh, it was. It was a great team. Because
we got
on
Maddox
paper.
Back. You got Garcia Parra. You got Todd Walker. It was a good team, but they didn't come through.
Right.
But Mark Pryor's head got all messed up internally.
But have you ever been more, have you ever been like more, so, I mean, 89 was exciting and there was, you know, I think you had to have hope for.
Have you ever been more, you started to say more convinced. I have never been more,
I mean, have you ever been more convinced that the Cubs were going to be good in the future than you are right now? 89, nope. We were excited. You mentioned George Bell, and, you know, I mean, yeah, you were excited. 2004, you were excited about that season, but this just seems a lot more...
seems a reality.
Yeah, it seems realistic that they will be awesome.
It seems like it's built properly.
I agree.
You know, from the ground up, it's built properly.
Can anyone in this room still tell me, though, that there isn't that voice in the back of their head that says, you're doomed?
Somehow we're going to fall.
It's the very essence of being a Cubs fan.
I agree.
Right. Yeah.
I agree. But I hate that voice. I want to tell it to shut up. Yeah. I want to enjoy this.
Enough already, right?
Yeah. It's just like...
See, and that's kind of interesting you bring that up because, I mean, like, 2015, I was so excited. You know, off season, I'm excited, and as we get closer to the 2016 season, I start to feel that stuff a little bit more. Yeah. It's not very much. It's just
it's
this
there.
Like tiny voice in the back of your head that's like, "Oh yeah, you know, you can be excited about it in the off season, but season's coming up.
Right,
bad things can happen.
Especially
yeah.
with the I word, like it could right. happen. You don't know. It happened to anybody.
But that's a nice thing about having a team that has a bunch of interchangeable parts.
Yes,
is except for maybe one player.
Yeah.
I think if one particular player goes down, then we're not in good shape.
But yeah, tons of versatility, though. Yeah.
I'm worried, and I think we're talking about the same player. Possibly not. What if that player doesn't have it anymore? Are we talking about Arrieta?
No, I'm talking about Rizzo.
Okay.
Oh, I'm talking about Arrieta. What if he doesn't have it?
I'm not worried about that.
No.
Because I don't think you're going to have a massive... I think he will drop off some. I mean, he has to.
Like a third of the pitcher he is. He's still excellent.
Right, right.
Well, no, not if he's a third of the pitcher.
No,
if he's well,
half his war is like...
Yeah, if he's a third, it's as good as... Yeah. What'd you say?
If he's 0.67 repeating of the pitcher he was.
Right.
Anything below that.
One other thing about the 80s, though, it was kind of like the killer moment for me, is when Huey Lewis kind of pulled an Eddie Vedder, and he showed up in the Giants locker room after they won the World Series. You're like...
See, I'm sure I'd turned off the TV
by then.
Earthquakes had happened. The world was destroyed.
Yeah, were the news not there because they were covering the earthquake? So it was just Huey Lewis.
There was a chopper overhead trying to get angles and views of a bridge.
But I watched it, right? It was like during part of the video
package. The worst joke you've ever delivered in the history of this podcast.
I'm a huge fan of it. I give you a plus one.
But like right after Don Zimmer got fired, they showed the video package, and all of a sudden Huey Lewis was in the Giants clubhouse. I'm like celebrating with them. I'm like, what is happening, Huey Lewis?
And why is this in the Zimmer package?
Yes.
He was a huge Huey Lewis fan. And
it's okay. It's ruined everything. Thanks, Huey Lewis. When we meet him, I'm going to bring it up.
That's the official sign you know he's done.
Right. So we managed to create an entire episode of this podcast based on one statement, just offhanded statement that I made months ago.
Well done, gentlemen.
For other shows, no, I just think you should do, like, honestly, you should do like a drunk history thing with the Cubs. Like Merkel's play, or maybe like Babe Ruth called shot, or maybe, I don't know, something like that. You should do, or even like the 18 season. There's a lot of rumors about the Cubs 18 season maybe throwing
well,
some of the games.
Now we have a video set up down here.
Huh. That's an intriguing
idea. We could turn
idea,
it into
actually.
A YouTube web series.
Okay. It doesn't even need to be part of the podcast.
Can I do the 84 Leon Durham ball going through his legs? Can I drunk history that?
I think you're onto something,
yeah, that,
Michael.
That's intriguing.
While Steve Garvey was in the other dugout banging hookers.
And with it, with this green screen, we can
make it look whatever you want.
We can make it... We can insert ourselves into the play.
You can make him gray, like you make him black and white, and put him in the.
Hey guys,
you have to drunkenly explain the play, like a telestrator type of thing.
Yeah, except for you can't see any of that. Like there's no
That'll
monitor.
Make it even better. Like you can see here.
You should be
Leon's
over here.
Positioning right here is a little bit right. off. You know where he should
you're
be.
You're up in the bleachers. Yeah,
right. I'll text the wife. We're getting wasted now.
I really like this idea.
All right. Well, that's something to shoot for.
Storing
next time.
It out there.
All right.
Well, thank you for having us. We'd love to come back anytime. I mean, I know Michael comes back sometimes, but yeah. As I think you saw today, there's only one talent in this duo.
So, where should people find you guys and all your social stuff and all that?
We're the Awesome 80s at theawesome80s.com. Host at theawesome80s.com. Awesome 80s. Just look up Awesome 80s Podcast on iTunes. What's their Twitter? Do we have the Twitter?
It's Awesome 80s Pod.
Awesome 80s Pod, yeah.
You can find us on the Facebooks at facebook.com/awesome80s. And the email host at awesome80s.com, awesome80s.com, or awesome80s.net. Once again, we own it all.
I have an idea for you guys. I mean, you're an 80s podcast. Not necessarily movies.
Right.
Not necessarily TV shows. I think you get... a couple of Cubs players from the 80s on your podcast. I know it wouldn't appeal to all of your listeners.
What's Keith Moreland doing?
No, I'm thinking Steve Trout. He would do it. That guy would do it.
We actually, in where I live, in Normal, the old Cubs are in a softball game against old Cardinals.
Yes, yes.
So I have reached out just to the Corn Belters
management. Tickets to that.
What?
I think I may have bought tickets to that.
I got to make sure I have them.
So this is Lee Smith. I think he's supposed to be there.
Well, Lee Smith did it a few years ago because Jake, my son, threw out the first pitch because it was his birthday with Lee Smith, which was pretty awesome.
Nice.
Wow.
So I will, I'm working
right,
on that.
One thing at a time.
If you don't have tickets, let me know. We'll put a package together.
Yeah, we should do it. Actually, because I think I saw it on Facebook, it showed up, and I think it's because you liked the page.
I like
it. And so I saw it. And so I was thinking, like, we should do, like, an IVMV Awesome 80s meetup.
That'd be awesome.
I think that'd be good.
Invite our listeners.
Which side does Lee play on?
He played on the Cubs. Last time they did this.
You guys have a lot of Cubs fans that listen to your show, don't you?
I hope so.
I mean, you guys talk about the Cubs on there.
If I found out that there was a Cardinal fan listening to our podcast, I would kick. I won't let his wife listen.
He'd box up the studio.
8 years. Eight years of episodes, just click the delete.
Done.
Shut it down.
Said, on eBay.
We always said, if we got an interview with Elizabeth Shue, doesn't matter where we're at in our podcast, we'd walk away. And
because the next week's show, you're like, why are we even doing this, man?
Right.
Well, thanks, guys, for coming, sitting in my basement with
us.
Me.
Thank you.
I usually have to sit down here alone, so it's nice.
Real quick.
Brar Cubs hat on his head.
Fergie Jenkins and Bill Buckner are confirmed. This time, Lee Smith is going as a Cardinal pitcher.
What?
Last time, he
man.
Did a Cub. And John Tudor and other players.
Is Tommy Herr going to be there? It'd be awesome to boo him.
But yes, thank you so much for having us. It was a joy. And I'll be happy to do it anytime.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Stay awesome, man.